The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
It's the letters I really want to go to, and I'm going to go to them now. Two quick ones. I'm going to pepper, as I say, the show with them this morning. But Jill writes to say, "My dearest Auntie Rosie." Right, to her auntie. "This letter should have been written a long time ago, and I'm writing it now to say I am so terribly sorry that I never took the time to say thank you for all the years you looked after me and minded me and loved me. I regret that I took you for granted. I didn't mean to, and it has haunted me for years. Home was a volatile place, fueled by alcohol and mental instability. It was a sorry and scary place for me, but you, Auntie Rosie, were my safe haven. You left this world as you had lived in it, quietly and with no fuss, but I hope you knew how much I loved you. Writing this letter has helped, but know this, Auntie Rosie, wherever you are, I loved you and I will always love you and I will be forever grateful to you for being there for me. With love, your niece, Jill." That's nice. I bet you that felt good, even though you didn't have the wherewithal to say it in life. Remember when Dolores O'Riordan died? I had a total epiphany and I thought, why don't we say congratulations, you're brilliant, to great artists / people we love when they're living? What is the point of being a valuable Van Gogh when the artist is sitting there without a pot to urinate in? Celebrate them while they're here. Huh? "Ryan, this is the letter I never wrote to my wife, Kathleen," says James. Lovely letter, this one. It says, "My dearest Kathleen, I've never written you a letter or told you I love you much. And I remember when we first met in 1992 in the Cashel Palace Hotel kitchen. I was the chef, you were the waitress, and we dated and we had good times. Then we discovered you were pregnant and you were afraid to tell your parents, so I said I'd go with you and tell them. I remember in your sitting room, your mother was there, and we were waiting for your father, and he came in, and I said to them, 'Kathleen's pregnant.' And your father said straight away, 'You have to get married.' And it was arranged to go and meet the priest, Father Dan. We had the wedding, July 30th, 1993. Myself, yourself, your sister Caroline, my best friend Alan, all arrived at the Church of the Holy Rosary, Ennis Road, Limerick. We had a great day and a great night, and we hitched home the next day. Now, I have to admit, when we were getting married, I wasn't sure it was the right thing. So now, 36 years later, we're still together, and I certainly know it was. Love you always, James." I'm going to go to another letter. This one's a little on the more serious side, but with our on-post competition. We'll be giving away big prizes, obviously, at some point next week, because I won't be here. What day is today? Tuesday? Tuesday. So I'll be here tomorrow. I won't be here Thursday, Friday for TV reasons, but I'll be back, obviously, Monday morning, so there'll be no... I'm still around. For Christmas. We'll be all the way up to the 23rd of December. So, yeah, that's what's happening. So we'll be doing more letters on Monday and Tuesday of next week as well. Good. Here's one. "My dear daughter," says this letter. This is short. "You would have been 40 this St. Stephen's Day if you'd made it that far. But it wasn't to be, was it? These days, I'm like Patrick Kavanagh in that poem. Every red-haired girl I see reminds me of you. Today, on Bray Seafront, there you were again. Hair, like your brother's, their pale skin, their blue eyes, humour glinting just beneath the surface. I use humour, too, to get over the hard bits. Isn't stillborn the saddest word? And maybe you'd have had music like your brother's and a singing voice like your Granny Alice. And maybe we'd all have gathered this St. Stephen's Day to celebrate your 40th birthday. A couple more grandchildren, maybe. Warm, all together, in the family. But none of that was to be. This St. Stephen's Day, we'll remember you, big sister, my daughter, 40 years on. Love, Mam." Let me just take another letter from our own post letters. There's so many coming in. This is a lovely one from Myra, who says, "Dear Mam, little did you know when you wrote all those beautiful love letters to Dad 70 years ago that they would one day become one of the most treasured possessions I own. And I say love letters, but they're quite innocent in today's terms. I came across this wonderful bundle after Dad died. Obviously, you both treasured and kept all of the letters you received and stored them together following your marriage in 1950. And the letters have given me a beautiful insight into two young people very much in love at a time of your lives of which I have no knowledge. I have read and shared them with my own daughters who never got to meet their granny. I have watched them grow and blossom into young women and that I am very proud of. And it saddens me that you never got to meet them, or they you. And reading sometimes, laughing, even crying over the letters has brought you to life for them in a way that I could never have done through old photos or recalling memories. And it's hard to imagine such times now when letters were your only means of communication. You didn't even have access to a phone. You couldn't even begin to imagine the progress in technology that allows me to have instant access to my daughter, Lindsay, your granddaughter, who lives in London, as we phone, FaceTime, message and text. But she will never have any records of this to show her future children when I'm no longer around. Reading through your letters, I couldn't help noticing that your letters were generally much longer than my dad's, a trait you continued into marriage. As I recall, you always managed to have the last word on things. And while the letters mainly deal with everyday events, they describe the loneliness when you were both parted and how much you were looking forward to seeing each other again, describing the anticipation of waiting to receive the reply and the disappointment on the days neither of you received a letter. Judging by the folds and the creases and the condition of your letters to Dad, it looked like they were carried about in his pockets to be read again and again as he went about his daily duties. And I often wondered, ma'am, how Dad managed to keep going and continue rearing the young family of six children after you died at the age of 53. You were such a united couple. Having read the letters, I can see that the love you shared from the very start sustained him until his death at the age of 83. I only became aware of the letters in my late 40s, not much younger than you when you died. And I'd previously always remembered and thought of you as old and could never have imagined you as a young woman. And I came to realise after reading your letters that the ma'am I loved and remembered was evident in your letters to Dad all those years ago. Thank you, ma'am, for this wonderful legacy. Your loving daughter, Myra. And the letters, Myra very kindly, that's a handwritten letter she sent to us with the letters scanned in from her parents to each other. And if you were wondering what romance looked like, it's a pen to paper and letters sent in the post with love. And honest to God, they're beautiful things. We have a quick break to take, and I have another letter and some more music for you. Plenty more coming up after this. Yes, you too, and Christmas baby. Come on, here's one. A letter from my mother-in-law. Dear mother-in-law Jenny, this just dawned on me the other day, says Sheila, by letter. Back in 1977, you allowed your son, now my beautiful husband, to stay with me for Christmas. I was working in the department of P&T, Post and Telegraphs. It was my first job from school and I was obliged to work Christmas Day. I was from the country and worked on Exchequer Street in Dublin. I had never been away from home for Christmas my whole life and I was so disappointed to be listed. I worked as a telephonist. And your son, my then boyfriend, said he would stay with me in my flat on Frankfurt Avenue. I was delighted. We ordered a £7 turkey from a friend who worked in a butcher's and met him at 10 p.m. Christmas Eve in the Harp Bar. I thought he'd forgotten us, but thankfully he arrived and we had Christmas dinner. On Christmas morning, I hopped on my Esca small wheel bike and cycled to work while he cooked the bird and prepared dinner. He improvised by putting the Christmas candles into the circles of a Neil Young tape. And when my shift was over, I cycled so fast, I'm sure I ran a few red lights. In fact, I know I did because I was beeped off the road. And when I arrived at the flat, my legs were like jelly. He opened the front door and I fell into his arms. He carried me upstairs because I couldn't walk and he put my bike away. And we had a wonderful dinner and watched movies on the television and it was our first Christmas together and it was our best. And now, 42 Christmases together later, I realised that he left his home for me and I will always love him for it. So thanks, Jenny, for letting me have the best ever Christmas. The only thing that matters is our loved ones at Christmas. So love to you all. Keep it simple and let the spirit of Christmas be with you. Well, Sheila, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
What a lovely letter.
Ah, oh, you know, a lovely memory as well. A lovely memory.
And Jenny's still with us, thankfully?
No, actually, she's passed.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I understood
yeah,
she was with
a
us.
A very strong, lovely woman.
And she's passed away. Okay. And tell me about that night when you arrived home for Christmas.
Well, when I came home from work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you're talking about a time when, you know, no mobile phones, no phone in the flat. I had no phone at home, so I was going to be completely on my own, you know, for Christmas. So, my boyfriend said, you know, sure, I'll come up for Christmas. But that was a big sacrifice for him, too, because he was going to be spending so many hours on his own as well. But we had a lovely Christmas. He came up. We had the turkey, which just about, I think he had to take the legs off the turkey to fit into the oven because it was a tiny oven. Our kitchen was literally the landing of the flat. And when I came home, I was so, you know, in a rush to get home to him that I think I nearly killed myself. And like that, like I said, fell into his arms, up the stairs. The little table was all set, turkey done, Brussels sprouts, carrots, Neil Young tape covered in Christmas paper, two little Christmas candles. It was, you know, it was lovely.
Do you know what? It was all you needed.
That's all we needed. It was just a simple Christmas. And I remember the next day then we had two friends of Pascal, because Pascal was a student at the time at the National College of Art, and two of his friends came over the next day and we had turkey sandwiches, leftovers from the turkey, and they came over and we played games and just simple.
Simple, beautiful Christmas. Sheila, listen, happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas. And can I just say, Ryan, big happy Christmas to my husband.
Yeah, we're thinking of him today. I know he's not in the best of health, so mind yourselves. Mind each other, and send our love to Pascal and to your family.
Indeed.
And have a lovely Christmas. And thanks for your lovely letter. Appreciate it greatly.
Thank you, Ryan.
Mind yourself.
Bye, happy Christmas, everyone.
And to you. We'll do all loads more letters again tomorrow. But in the meantime, thanks so much for listening today. Stay tuned for Sean O'Rourke. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow between 9 and 10.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.